This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. As the global COVID-19 pandemic wears on, the spread of another virus called monkeypox is concerning epidemiologists. Now Greater Cincinnati has confirmed cases of monkeypox. But what is it? What are the symptoms? And how worried should we all be? Joining me to answer those questions and others are Dr. Jennifer Forrester, an associate professor at UC College of Medicine and medical director of infection prevention at UC Health. Welcome, Dr. Forrester.
Hi, thanks for having me.
And Cincinnati Health Department interim medical director, Dr. Denise Saker. Thanks for being here, Dr. Saker.
It's my pleasure.
UC Health is a sponsor of Cincinnati Public Radio. And if you have questions or comments, call us at 513-419-7100 or email talk@wvxu.org. Dr. Saker, let's talk with you. I mentioned that we have some confirmed cases of monkeypox. The last I heard, we had two cases here in the Cincinnati area. Tell us about the virus. Is it similar to smallpox or chickenpox? What should we be looking for?
Sure. So monkeypox, which, by the way, does not come from monkeys, is a DNA virus similar to smallpox. It is unrelated to chickenpox. So when we think about diagnosis and treatment and the vaccinations, we're thinking more along the lines of the clinical therapeutics that we have for smallpox and the diagnosis. There are two main strains of monkeypox. One from West Africa and one from the Congo Basin. The circulating virus currently in the U.S. is the West African strain or type, which causes less severe disease than the Congo Basin strain of the virus. So that's some clinical information that's important that we are seeing a less serious clinical situation for our patients who experience monkeypox.
Well, that's good. I mean, I guess that's a bit of a silver lining if we can find one here. And Dr. Saker, talk to us about you were talking about these different strains. What about the different symptoms that people experience?
So the symptoms primarily start as many types of viral illnesses with feelings of fever, headache, muscle aches. You can get swollen lymph nodes. Those are the glands, say, in your neck or under your arms. You can have chills. You can be tired. And most of the time, all those symptoms happen before you break out in the rash. And the rash is the characteristic pimple or blister, and that can appear anywhere on the body that has had contact with the virus. It can be inside the mouth, hands, feet, chest. In our current outbreak, the areas of concern are in the genitals because currently monkeypox is primarily a sexually transmitted infection. The rash lasts about 2 to 4 weeks. You're considered contagious as long as you have new or open lesions, and then you're considered not contagious when every single lesion has healed. And you feel well.
And Dr. Forrester, tell us about how contagious is monkeypox. And Dr. Saker just mentioned you're contagious as long as these blisters, as long as these pox have not healed. But how long does that often take?
Yeah, so you that is correct. The lesions tend to be the most infectious kind of period of the illness. And so the contact, so direct skin to skin or mucous membrane to skin contact, is really how this virus is transmitted from person to person. So anywhere that those lesions are present or even potentially in other body fluids, we have a lot to learn from this virus. As was stated, you know, we have not seen this traditionally in the United States, thanks to excellent vaccination strategies against smallpox, in the 60s and 70s. But basically it's contact, skin to skin or intimate close contact. There is some potential of droplet spread, but really we don't know a lot about that. And we don't think that that's the most common way that this virus transmits from person to person. It's just that skin to skin contact.
So, Dr. Forrester, I've seen some reports about spreading on, you know, bed linens and things like that. Is there a danger of spread through surfaces? I guess I'm wondering, are we going to be disinfecting everything like we were at the beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic?
Yeah, thanks for bringing that up, actually. You know, similar to smallpox, this right, like Dr. Saker said, this is in the same orthopox family as smallpox. And it can be transmitted by surfaces and lasts actually probably longer. I think we learned through the COVID pandemic that actually COVID didn't really spread through surfaces right. All that much. It was really kind of that droplet, you know, respiratory virus thing. And this is different. This can last on surfaces for a bit of time. So it is important that if someone does have those lesions, again, trying to stay away, and you had asked earlier how long that takes. It can take 3 weeks, you know, for some people's skin to heal appropriately, but that can really vary from person to person, but can be a little bit of time. But then after that, making sure that we sanitize, you know, bed linens and don't share bed linens and towels during that time, and then make sure that they're adequately sanitized appropriately thereafter is very important to stop the spread too.
So, Dr. Saker, where are we now locally in terms of the spread of monkeypox? Are we still with 2 confirmed cases, or have we seen that grow since that information was released?
Yes, that is actually, we do have 2 cases in the city of Cincinnati. We are rolling out a more streamlined testing approach involving private laboratories rather than testing through the Ohio Department of Health. And we're also looking at utilizing the preliminary or presumptive positive cases while we're awaiting CDC confirmation. A presumptive case and close contacts of a presumptive case will trigger mitigation measures, isolation, and other public health advisories that go out to families and individuals. In the state of Ohio, there are, as of this morning, 34 cases. It seems like Central Ohio has the largest percentage of cases. In the Columbus area, there are 13. But it's going to be, I think, as more providers, medical providers in offices and emergency rooms have more facility with asking the questions and the physical exam that's required to look at potential sources of or sites where lesions are, and then having more testing. And this, again, is similar to other kinds of outbreaks, including COVID, that frequent testing, even when suspicion is not at the highest level, but frequent testing is going to give us the most information. We do have some atypical presentations where there's less of that preliminary collection of symptoms, and the first thing that a patient experiences is one lesion. And then this is not meant to, you know, instill any kind of over concern, but as more people are exposed and we have more cases, we will see more variety in what we previously thought of as the typical presentation.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about monkeypox with Dr. Jennifer Forrester, an associate professor at the University of Cincinnati College of Medicine and medical director of infection prevention at UC Health, and Cincinnati Health Department interim medical director, Dr. Denise Saker. We did just get an email from a listener. The email said, "As a gay man, I have already experienced some stigma from straight people who second-guess being around me or my friends out of fear. I hope we can continue to educate the public so that we don't experience the same stigma towards gay men that we went through at the beginning of HIV. That's a really important point because I've seen a lot of national news stories that note that many of these infections are occurring among men who have sex with men. Dr. Forrester, talk to us a little bit about the best way to communicate this without creating stigma for people.
Right. This is an extremely important point. So anyone can get monkeypox. It is skin to skin contact. It is, while certainly sexual activity is a skin-to-skin contact, it is not the only method of getting this virus. So, but what we are seeing, and this, you know, is just how it is that the current outbreak that we are seeing, the majority of cases are in men who have sex with men for now. There are, within the United States, children who have monkeypox. There are women who have monkeypox. So this isn't strictly a disease of men who have sex with men. And I think that is a very important point, but also important is to pay attention to the group that is most highly at risk so that they have the knowledge to protect themselves and the ability to protect themselves as well. And that, you know, we do have the, as Dr. Saker said, increased testing, increased knowledge within providers to think about it and to test for monkeypox so that we can move down the line to give vaccine to the people who would be in currently the vaccine is open to people in close contact with a known or suspected case. And so that we get those people to protect them. And then hopefully as more vaccine becomes available, that group will expand to those who are otherwise maybe at risk in the future.
Well, Dr. Forrester, let's talk some more about the vaccine because, during the COVID-19 pandemic, we've all kind of gotten used to there being lots of COVID vaccine and boosters available, and they've been fairly easy to get for many months now. The monkeypox vaccine is not in that same category. Talk to us about the vaccine and the numbers available and how it can help and who's really being targeted for the vaccine.
Right. So this vaccine there are two vaccines, actually, one of which is, of course, the old smallpox vaccine, as we talked about, they're in the same class. And so many the vaccine for smallpox is thought to be protective against monkeypox. And so those who have had the smallpox vaccine may potentially still have some immunity against this virus as well. It is a live virus vaccine, which has its issues. And so hence there's this second vaccine, the Jynneos vaccine, which is not a live virus vaccine and is the one that's currently being at least given to the at-risk population currently. So, but all of these are in a national stockpile or, have to be released from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Those have been really... Oh, sorry.
Oh, no, please go ahead.
So those have been released to the states kind of similarly to the COVID vaccine early on to states by how many cases they have. So Ohio, I don't know, I guess we'd kind of be in the middle, I suppose. There are certainly states and cities, New York, Miami, Chicago, that have many more cases than Ohio does. And then there are obviously states that don't have many at this point, and so don't have as many much vaccine is available. And the current guidance is that only close contacts of a known or suspected case be given the vaccine.
And do people, we've read some reports that people who already have monkeypox are sometimes given the vaccine even when they have the disease to try to blunt the effects. Is that right? Or what's the situation there?
Yes, that's interesting. And I do understand the different points of view. There is an actual antiviral that's also available, particularly for people at risk for severe disease. So basically those who are immunocompromised at the moment. And I will reiterate what Dr. Saker said, that if this virus, gets any further and we do see it in more of the population, we may see different symptoms and different progression. So those currently that we think are at risk for real severe disease, like I mentioned, are the people whose immune systems aren't 100%. Mm. And there are antivirals available for them, again, from a national stockpile. But the vaccine really, I think from a public health standpoint, especially since most people, it's a fairly, again, the mortality from this disease is fairly low. that the vaccine can really prevent the spread from person to person. And that's where most of the public health efforts are being focused.
Yeah, if I could add on to that, Jen, that's accurate. And also what the recommendation for vaccination is the close contact of a presumed or positive case. So we're trying to prevent someone who actually has it already, because you will develop natural immunity if you get the monkeypox infection. But we're the vaccination currently is being used to prevent infection or prevent severe infection in people who've been exposed. Some of those people who were exposed and got the vaccination will still break out, but it will limit their degree of contagiousness. It will limit the number of lesions they get. And just to be clear, the vaccine that we're currently recommending use that we have in the United States is a two-dose series, 28 days apart. If an individual is a close contact and receives the vaccine and still breaks out, they will not be eligible for the second dose of the vaccine. So there are some permutations that are being worked out by jurisdictions and the CDC, and we're following guidance from all those organizations. But primarily in Cincinnati, there is vaccine available. It is being distributed on a limited basis for those who are at risk of either getting disease or getting severe disease. And the other population that is recommended to be vaccinated are the laboratory workers who are handling the specimens. Mm. So that's the vaccination. And then along the lines of the treatment, there are two treatments. One is an oral medication, or there are a number of antivirals, but the one that we currently have in Cincinnati is an oral medication that's given twice a day for 14 days. It can be used in very young children. And another at-risk population are children under the age of 8. They tend to have more severe disease. And those children can be given this oral medication. There's not a lot of research to back this up, but the evidence that we have so far is that it is safe and effective in preventing severe disease in young children, those who are immunocompromised, and those who have skin conditions for whom a monkeypox outbreak for them would be more severe because they have underlying skin problems.
Mm. Dr. Saker, how will the public health response to this virus coexist with our continued response to COVID? I guess I wonder, does this have the potential to further strain our healthcare resources?
I would not expect hospitalizations and ICU admissions and emergency room visits at anywhere close to the level that we saw with the coronavirus pandemic. This is self-limited disease. It generally, people who are healthy and have a normal immune system can recover from this without vaccine or without medication at all. What we want to do, though, is utilize testing to identify cases and stop the spread, because the more often, as we learned and we have known and we've learned with the coronavirus, is the more cases you have, the more opportunity that the virus has to be something different. And the more often it infects somebody, the more often the virus will mutate or cause symptoms that are atypical, and then we end up down the road where we do not want to be. So I can't emphasize enough that it is okay to worry a little bit about whether you have this infection and seek medical advice. With the increased, and this is different than when we had with the coronavirus pandemic. We had problems getting adequate testing early on, and so with a focus on early testing and mitigation strategies, isolation and cleaning and avoiding contact, we're very hopeful that we're going to be able to contain this and not see anything near what we saw with coronavirus.
And Dr. Forrester, Dr. Saker said, you know, it's okay to worry a little bit, where the effort is to contain the virus, which makes a world of sense. How do we go about talking to a public that's already so weary from this ongoing public health crisis, from COVID-19 and the pandemic? How can people address their own kind of virus fatigue at this point?
Yes, I agree. We have lots of medical or virus, yes, fatigue. I think this is actually something, I guess it'll keep me in business, but this is something we're probably going to see for the future. You know, the world is becoming smaller or more interconnected. Whether it's climate change or population growth or a number of things that lead to kind of crossover events of particularly viruses, but also, bacteria that become more resistant to the antibiotics that we have, et cetera. We have known this for decades that these things happen and these factors contribute to them. Perhaps we're just becoming particularly more aware and being connected with information. And I think that we should look at that as power, as a way to protect ourselves. I agree. This is not something that, as of yet, needs to be, on the forefront of everyone's mind is, you know, can I shake someone's hand or can I give a hug or something like that? We're not at that point. Luckily, and if we get the word out, though, I think it's important to talk about it so that we get the word out so that people can use the information that it is out there, that if you have symptoms, you can, you know, recognize the symptoms in your own body, whether it be the early symptoms of just feeling like you don't feel well today, like you have the flu, or you actually develop develop the rash, that you take measures to say, hey, I better get tested. I can get treatment if I have it. Actually, at this point, the rash can be a lot of different things, and there's treatments for many of those, the differential diagnosis that I think of with some of my patients with rashes, and get treated and then be able to protect the people who you're potentially in contact with. And that's how we stop the disease from spreading and becoming more of a worry for everyone all the time. Mm-hmm.
And we only have about 30 seconds left, but Dr. Saker, what's the most important thing we can all do to kind of protect ourselves from this?
I agree with Dr. Forrester that being aware and not being afraid to talk about it and ask for advice from your healthcare provider, because talk about it with your family members. The listener who mentioned don't buy into the stigma goes with it.
Thank you.
Sure, sir.
I've been talking with Dr. Jennifer Forrester, an associate professor at the University of Cincinnati College of Medicine and medical director of infection prevention at UC Health, and Dr. Denise Saker, Cincinnati Health Department interim medical director. Thank you both so much for your time today.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
This
Thanks
is
so
Cincinnati
much.
Edition. I'm Lucy May.